first hour, talking about nut trees and all the fall color and answering your gardening questions. And so we're really, really just fortunate to be here. Thank you, Lizzie, for being here. You're a great producer.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. I am just super excited to hear about all the nut trees and how it'd be an amazing situation for, you know, people to start planting nut trees.
And that's what Linda said. She agreed about having a nut tree in every yard. And so Linda from Zone 8B. So I love hearing from text messages and with the emails that they're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. And so let's go through, and John Denver's going to introduce the dirty word of the day.
Inch by inch, row by row, gonna make this garden grow. All it takes is a rake and a hoe and a piece of fertile ground. Inch by inch, row by row, someone bless these seeds I sow. Someone warm them from below till the rain comes tumbling down.
And now it's time for the dirty word of the day on Better Lawns and Gardens with Teresa Watkins.
And the dirty word of the day is zucchery. Z-O-O-C-H-O-R-Y, zucchery. And seeds can be dispersed in many ways. And one of the most interesting and unintentional ways of spreading seeds is called zucchery. Zucchery is where seeds are transported on the outside of vertebrate animals, mostly mammals, a process known as epizucchery. Seeds can adhere to an animal fur by means of stiff hair covering the seed, or stickers. Nevertheless, epizucchorious transport can be highly effective if seeds attach to wide-ranging animals. This form of seed dispersal has been implicated in rapid plant migration and the spread of invasive species. Seed dispersal via ingestion and defecation by vertebrate animals, mostly birds and mammals, or endozucchery, in the dispersal mechanism for most tree species. It is generally a co-evolved mutualistic relationship in which a plant surrounds seeds with an edible, nutritious fruit as a good food resource for animals that consume it. Such plants may advertise their presence of a food resource by using color. Birds and mammals are the most important seed dispersers, but a wide variety of other animals, including turtles, fish, and insects, can transport viable seeds. Here's a few different ways for seed dispersal. Seed dispersal by ants is called myrmecochory. Seed dispersal by bees is called melittocochory. It's an unusual dispersal mechanism for a small number of tropical plants. As of 2023, seed dispersal has been documented in only 5 plant species, 3 tropical trees, and 2 orchids, the Vanilla odorata and the Vanilla plantifolia. Seed predators, dung beetles, are known to disperse seeds. We're not going to go into that. And so other types of zucchery are chiroptery, which is seed dispersal by bats, malacochory, which is seed dispersal by snails, and ornithocochory by birds. And so the dirty word of the day is zucchery. And it's when your animal is covered with seeds. And just because your dog got into a prickle patch and it has all these burrs from the Biden's alba, that seed dispersal is a form of zucchery.
All right, now what is it called whenever you get them stuck to your shoelaces or your pants? Is there a whole other thing, or would that fall under the same category?
That would fall under the same thing, and we are mammals, and so we would be humans, and that's how it gets dispersed.
That's what I'm talking about.
There you go. That's how Velcro got invented.
Really?
Was that the person saw the seeds sticking, you know, those little pricklings, and you can find them on different types of plants. And when they noticed that the burrs stuck together, then he decided to invent Velcro.
Genius.
Yes.
Genius.
Very. 1-888-455-2967, or you can text us at 23680. We had a wonderful first hour. Like I said, if you're interested in growing chestnuts and pecans and hickories, what you need to do in your vegetable garden, we're going to be talking about that in November. And you can also listen to the podcast. I'm going to post them on our Facebook page, and you can subscribe to iHeart and Audioboom or anywhere you listen to podcasts, so you never need to miss a show. Coming up, we have Eric Appen. He's with Appenberry's Nursery. We got into quite a discussion, and I have to say, I love the new ways we think and perspectives of thinking about gardening. And it's changing, and you know, we have a lot of garden myths out there and a lot of misinformation out there that is trying to be corrected. And I think Eric is going to help enlighten us on the different different terminologies that we use in gardening. And I'm looking forward to it. It's quite exciting.
Yes.
I love Appenberry's Nursery. I went by and, you know, I just couldn't help myself.
Yes. And don't let Teresa scare you away with that scary word, change. This is a good thing.
It is a good thing. From the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios, if it's Saturday morning, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins. One of my weaknesses, which I'm actually very proud of, is that I love to go to nurseries and see what's blooming, what's unique. I love finding new plants, and I love this independent garden center, which is located in College Park. It's very unique, and it's called Appenberry's Gardens. Joining us right now is one half of the owners, Eric Appen. Good morning, Eric. How are you this morning?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Oh, well, thank you so much for coming on. I certainly do appreciate it. Eric, it makes me very happy to stop by your nursery and just stroll through and look at all the variety of plants and flowers and shrubs that you grow. How did you and your lovely wife, Lisa, love of gardening, lead to, having such a beautiful and unique nursery?
Oh, well, thank you for that compliment. You know, it really makes me smile that it is a happy place for you, because it is a passion project. Admittedly, it all started, my wife and I are opposites, but opposites sometimes attract. She's a farm girl and I'm a city boy. We met in college, and she is a fifth generation Floridian farmer and just always had a love for nature and gardening. And when we moved to Orlando 30 years ago, she just really wanted to do something special. And so I have to give credit where credit's due. It was all her idea. It was all her sweat equity in the beginning. And it's been a fun ride.
It's just wonderful to see the partnership you both have. And so we had a great conversation this week. When I brought up the word annuals, I really liked your explanation of how in Florida there's no such thing. So can you elaborate on your philosophy and explain what you mean and how we misuse, you know, annuals and perennials?
Yeah, I think one of the things that's unique about Lisa and I, we came to the industry more as consumers than professionals. We studied engineering in college, so we weren't really horticulturists. And we've always really tried to speak to people in what I would call layman's terms, or things that are more meaningful. And what I've always reacted to, and probably strongly yesterday, I appreciate you listening to me on my soapbox a little bit, it's very confusing to Florida gardeners, perennials and annuals, because I think the inference is stronger towards things that aren't as meaningful. So for us, we really like to refer things as seasonal. And annuals in some cases can be perennial-like here, and perennials can be very much like an annual here. So it gets kind of turned upside down. So we use different terminology. And I think the seasonal aspect of Florida gardening is what tricks people up, because our seasons are reversed from the rest of the country.
That's true. And so, you know, we have dry winters and we have wet summers, and April showers do not bring May flowers here. And so I appreciate that. So when should gardeners start looking for seasonal plants in Florida?
Well, I really love having you on today because this is kind of the beginning of what I think is my favorite time at Florida. We have a lot of what we would call cool seasonal flowers that come to us this time of year. It's a great time to be out in the garden right now because many times our winters are mild enough that we don't have a hard frost, and you can get things all the way from now, November, till late spring, April, May, and enjoy your garden throughout.
And so how long should people realistically expect then their plants to live?
Well, you know, every plant has a proper place and a proper care profile, but we as plant parents have to take responsibility too. I think in Florida, if you find the right things, you know, things can give you a lot of enjoyment. But some of the things that are seasonal for us just can't live through our hot, wet, humid, long summers. And so really you have to look at, you know, what your profile is in terms of expectations.
And so what do you mean? What kind of expectations should they search and determine?
Well, so you would, you know, ask, like, right now we have a really nice selection of geraniums and some plants like alyssum, which I love. And those are kind of plants that traditionally we would call seasonal, meaning you plant them now. And by April and May, they've kind of done everything that they can do, and they really start to look kind of tired and not so great by June and July. So some gardeners just pull them out and move on. Other gardeners are more resourceful and may be able to nurse those plants along through the summer months and then, of course, fertilize and cut them back in the fall and have a whole nother year of enjoyment. So it really just depends on the gardener and your resolve.
Yeah, and that's what I did. I had alyssum at last three seasons just because I deadheaded
it. Wow.
And but yeah. You know, I knew it wasn't going to look good for 3 months, you know. So that was one of the things, is that it was in the right place and it was getting what it needed, but it wasn't going to flower. But by deadheading it, it did last a little bit longer. But that's important. But what really ticks me off, Eric, is when in, you know, late spring you see the box stores putting out foxgloves and delphiniums, and they're all blooming gorgeous and they look great. How long are those going to last though?
Yeah, that's the most difficult thing for people. I think, you know, I always advocate buying local, not so much because I think we do a good job. I think it's more that we respect the environment that we're in, and we buy all our plants and they're all grown through local growers who kind of have to abide by the season. So here's the thing. You start having people that really think spring for us starts in April, and that's really towards the end of it. So you really want to kind of start early if you can. And I would say that the disappointing thing in some of those cases is they're not going to get the longevity out of them that they want, because those are flowers that, unfortunately, again, just can't get past June without a lot of, you know, TLC. So start early. That's my advice.
There you go. So what are some great ways to use seasonal plants?
You know, I love containers. I think the biggest thing that we've learned from some of our growers that do sell outside of our area is that people garden in Florida differently, but I think you got to bring the pot above the ground. Unfortunately, we're living on a peninsula. The soil's very sandy, and if you're not willing to spend the time and effort and money to amend it and make it rich and organic, it's best just to buy a pot and get really good potting mix.
Yeah, that's very smart, and that I love containers, and I do a container gardening class, but you have some beautiful containers at Appenberry's Gardens. And so, I mean, hanging baskets, I mean, you can use them anywhere.
Yeah, it's really versatile. You know, things that I always love is using pots and other things almost as hardscape in the environment. So, like, you may want to plant a bed with some things like Asiatic jasmine and just drop a nice, low, wide bowl in, and that's your seasonal garden. You can change it out, you know, 3-4 times a year if you want, or you can just plant, you know, one thing in it that's going to give you some year-round color. And the fun thing about that is you always have that weekend warrior approach where you don't feel like you have to go out there and redo a whole garden. You can just kind of attack that container and have fun with it.
That is so much easier. I agree. So what are your top cool season flowers that you're recommending right now and that you have on hand?
Yeah, you know, I'm biased. I love geraniums because they are forgiving. You know, geraniums are one of those plants that don't require a lot of water. They do have some really cool new varieties out now that are kind of a combination from what we used to call the old traditional ivy geraniums, which would trail and cascade, and more of the upright varieties. But the colors are super vibrant, very easy. I love the alyssum. You mentioned that one for the same reasons, but it's fragrant. And, you know, having fragrance in the garden is great. And I don't know anybody that can't look at a periwinkle and just smile. I mean, those are... Those are just those flowers that look back at you and say, we're happy.
No, I agree. I agree. And you have some really colorful flowers right now. So any special maintenance that you suggest that will help seasonal plants last longer?
Yeah, you know, I always like to try to encourage our clients to start with the end in mind. And that means, like, you know, build a good foundation. I encourage people to go to their independent garden centers and purchase the products that they have there, whether it be the soil or fertilizers, oftentimes because they're superior products and they'll go a long way to having success. But I think the biggest tip is water. You really got to be strategic. This time of year, it's a little easier because when the temperatures drop, it's not as intense. But as we get into late spring, if you want those containers to look really good, you're going to have to water them. And so, you know, picking the right location, kind of figuring out what your water profile is. Are you a person that loves to go out every morning, or, you know, you a once a week kind of person, and then pick the plants accordingly.
And so you also have a great assortment of vegetables and herbs. And so tell us about that. How do you suggest that people, because they're considered seasonal. So what would you suggest growing right now?
Yeah, expectation management. You know, I always share with people, vegetables are designed to do a single thing, which is provide you a fruit, but they are not really designed to do that forever. So kind of pick your windows. I think it's a great time to start now. And again, you have to really think your sizing and scale. But if you just want a little, you know, herb garden, maybe a pot's a great way to go. If you're really trying to grow vegetables and you want a crop that you can share with friends and family, maybe think about using raised beds. Just in-ground stuff in general in Florida is tricky. So, you know, use that knowledge to kind of know that you have to set it up in advance. So containers and raised beds are generally what we recommend.
I agree. And I just did a raised bed for clients for a little 8-year-old girl, and I posted it on Facebook. And it works so well. It's right at the right height. She can just bend down and not have to bend over too far. And, you know, take care of the plants and, you know, make sure it's watered correctly and things. So she loves that. And they all came from your nursery. And so I love that. So tell us about some of the other plants that you have going on right now, because you have so much more. It really is. Appenberry's Gardens is really a destination, you know, garden center.
Yeah, you know, we really try to focus on color. I think color in the garden is what really inspires people. And my wife, Lisa, has done a great job. She does all the buying and merchandising, and she's brought in a lot of neat things. We have a whole selection of petunias. Again, some of these are fragrant, which is even neat to have. But you always have the option to start looking into, you know, we're almost at Christmas. The poinsettias are coming soon. But, you know, mixing those with non-traditional things, like I said, geraniums, alyssum, you have those options to kind of Florida garden in the winter, which most of the country doesn't. So let's take advantage of it.
Exactly. Well, Eric, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your philosophy. I agree with you wholeheartedly. And so tell everybody where Appenberry's Garden Center is.
Yeah, we are a true neighborhood garden center. We're a third family of ownership. It's been there over 40, 45 years. We're right in the heart of College Park off Edgewater Drive. But for those that aren't in our neighborhood, it's really easy to get to. 1 mile off I-4, you can exit at Parr or Fairbanks, and it's just one turn and you're there.
Thank you so much, Eric. Tell Lisa I said hi. Appreciate it.
I will.
Thanks for having me. Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for coming on. And so, Lizzie, the Super Petunia, by Proven Winners Honey. Mm-hmm. It just blew me away yesterday.
That's gorgeous.
And it's the color of petunias. They have striped petunias. They have all different colors. And it's just so wonderful to walk through. So if you've never been to Appenberry Gardens in downtown College Park, make a trip soon, because it's just wonderful. From the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios, it's Saturday morning. You're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. If you know someone who loves to garden or has a gardening question, please let them know about Better Lawns and Gardens. Let them know they can listen in every Saturday morning from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. or they can listen to the podcast.
That's right. You can go to WFLAOrlando.com and search Better Lawns and Gardens and you'll find us there.
I will tell you, Lizzie, yesterday I was almost foiled I missed my wallet. I went to the garden center and I was driving around with all the visits that I had to do without my wallet.
You were walletless?
Yes. I did not have any identification or anything at all. And so I'm in Avonbury's, and so really helpful employees. They love to be generous with their advice and their help. And so I love going there. But she says, "Oh, but do you have your wallet on your app?" And I said, "Oh, yes, I do." And so, you know, Tony didn't remind me that I didn't have my wallet, so he didn't want me to spend any money. But I was able to still buy plants without my wallet.
Does he not know? I mean, okay, I know that you're going to be all humble about this, but does he not know your clout here? And all Teresa Watkins would have to do is say, "I promise I will pay you on Tuesday for a burger today," and boom, there you go.
That's funny. Well, we've got a lot of text messages. If you would like to give us a call, 1-888-455-2967, or you can text 23680. So Lee Bunnell, she did email us, and she emailed me a great picture, but it just breaks my heart. She has a crown of thorns, and this is a beautiful plant. And I'm going to post two pictures. I'm going to post a picture of Roberto's healthy crown of thorns, and then I'm going to post a picture of Lee's so people can see that you need to take action. Because Lee, you really need to help your crown of thorns right away. It has powdery mildew and also all kinds of insect issues. So one, crown of thorns needs full sun and it needs good air circulation. It doesn't like to be overwatered. It's a succulent. So hold back on the water. It may be getting too much water, which is causing it to stress out. But then you need to use a horticultural oil or neem oil on it to get rid of your pest problems. So I think you need to put on a good pair of gloves, cut off what is dead on your crown of thorns, and then, you know, give it a little bit more air circulation. Get rid of all the diseased leaves and, you know, kind of just let it go through winter, very dry, no need to keep watering it, okay? And I would say water it once a month if it doesn't get rain, and it's going to be nice and healthy again. Go ahead and fertilize it in the springtime, and it will recover, okay? But that just did my heart. Oh, my goodness, the poor thing.
Well, potentially she can save this.
So yes, that was she can
good
save
that
it.
She reached out to you.
It's very good. Yes, there is a solution there. So then Ira sent me in a photo of his avocado plants that he started from a pit. Good morning, Ira. Thank you for listening. He keeps them on a screened-in porch, which this is what he needs to do because they're only 15 inches tall right now. So if he puts them in the ground, they're going to get zapped in Bunnell this winter. So just wait a couple more years. We're going to keep him in pots for a couple more years, Ira. But he wants to know if he should snip off the few inches from the top to promote growth or just leave them alone. Leave them alone. You want your avocado to be single trunked. Okay, Ira? Single trunk. If you were to snip it off at the top, the branches would grow and it would divide up and you'd have two branches at the top. So I don't want you to do that. Just they look good. They look nice and healthy. Leave them alone right now. Give them some fertilizer in the spring. And we'll think about maybe putting them in a bigger pot next year. But right now, they look good. So leave them alone. Great question, Ira. Thank you so much.
Exactly. Now, can we go ahead and give people a heads up that you may want to buy your frost cloth now?
So smart. Okay, so here's the thing is that Florida's, you know, where gardeners know here, people have lived here a long time, that it can be 80 degrees one day and 30 degrees the next day, mm-hmm. and we don't get any way to prepare. And when they tell us it's going to be a freeze, everybody hits the garden centers and they buy all the frost blankets up, the frost cloths up, they buy them all, and you mm-hmm. can't find any.
Right.
So this is a time right now Garden centers have them available. You can order them online. And so get your frost blanket now. Determine how much you need to cover your pygmy date palms, to cover your tropicals like your hibiscus if you're in an area that freezes. South Florida, you won't need to do it too much. This is not going to be that cold of a year for South Florida. But occasionally we do get frost blankets. Now, the good thing about the frost cloth, it's a material like if you sew, it's like the interfacing of a collar.
Okay.
That you put in to make the collar stiff. But it allows sunlight to get through and it allows water to get through. So you can leave it on for weeks at a time.
But don't leave, if you put blankets or plastic over them, don't leave those
that
on.
That you have to take off every day. So it's a big pain. So the frost blanket's the better way to do it. It's the healthier way to do it. And also, too, at the end of wintertime, you can literally dry it off, fold it up, and you can use it next year.
Oh, I love that.
So it's a really easy product to use, and it's so important. Make sure you have enough.
Okay. Just kind of, can you throw a guesstimation out? Say that I have, you know, a hedge, and my hedge is probably about 6 foot long, about maybe 3 foot high. How many frost blankets, or how much should they measure to ask their...
Well, you actually can buy it in a roll. So you would tell them, okay, I want 20 feet of it. So you could, it comes in, like online, it comes in packaging, and you can order the size you need.
Okay.
Okay, but you could also go to the garden centers, and they have it on a roll, like paper, towels,
okay.
And you can just pull it and cut what you need.
Now, does it need to go all the way to the ground to cover
it
the...
It needs to go all the way to the ground. You need to cover your tropicals up, and that'll help them.
Good. You know, and I'm one of those weirdos, though. I know that some listeners are going, what, are you kidding me? We're going to have no frost in sight. But you know what? I've got 90% of my Christmas shopping by July done, so thank you. I'm way ahead of the game.
Well, I appreciate that. That's wonderful. So, so the St. Augustine, John... In Palm Bay, he asked the question about thatching or dethatching and aerating his St. Augustine lawn. He says his St. Augustine lawn looks great. He just wanted to know if we need to do it down here in Florida, and only if we abuse our plants. So, no, it's not something that you need to do on a regular basis. Don't overwater, don't over fertilize your St. Augustine, and you will not have to aerate it. And that's just a good best management practices. So let's see. We got an olive tree question. We have an avocado question from Buffalo. And we have asparagus and elms. So come on back. 407, what's the number? 1-888-455-2967. Or you can text 23680 from the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios. I'm Teresa Watkins. And this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. We have a few more minutes to take your phone calls and your gardening questions and text 1-888-455-2967, or you can text me at 23680. And let's go to Roy in Windermere. Good morning, Roy.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Roy. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm getting older and slower.
That's the goal. That's the goal, is to get older and slower.
What I'm calling for is, I never remember, that's going bad too, my memory, losing leaves on my plumeria.
Uh-huh.
Is that common?
It can be if they get, or they're getting a fungal issue, a disease issue. It can be losing their leaves, or it can just be stress where they're not getting enough water. And with the drought, they may not be getting enough water. Do you have an irrigation system on them?
Yeah, but like a sprinkler system?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know if it gets enough or not. Maybe okay. I have it going about 15 minutes each zone.
Well, that should be enough, but with the heat that we've been having over the last year and the drought, it may not be enough. Now, did you fertilize recently?
I just did, but I hadn't till then, about 2 days ago.
2 days ago, but it wasn't. You didn't do it before the leaves dropped.
No.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, the fertilizer may encourage some new growth that may get damaged by the wintertime. So, you know, I would fertilize in the springtime and maybe once during the the summer. You know, last time would be around August or, you know, first part of September. But they'll recover. Plumeria is very, you know, forgiving. And so they should grow their leaves back.
Great. Is it too late to plant seeds anymore?
What kind of seeds?
Vegetable seeds.
Vegetable seeds? No, your cool season vegetables, you can plant those right now, sure.
Great.
Okay?
Yeah. Sounds good.
Thank you, Roy, for listening. I appreciate you. It's wonderful. Let's go to Les in Apopka. Good morning, Les. How can I help you?
Good morning. Next week, we're planning on putting a string or a row of flowers around in front of my entrance to my church.
Okay.
And it's under irrigation, but we're looking for colorful flowers that are going to survive the freeze because people don't come out and cover them up.
Right.
What plants would you recommend?
Well, how big is the area, Les?
Oh, this is about 60 feet long and about a foot wide.
Okay. And so I would make sure that you're putting in only enough so that they grow to the size you need. And, you know, you have a number of different choices. So you could do pinwheel jasmines. You could do plumbagos. Plumbagos would look really pretty in a hedge. And then you could also do thrialis, which is a yellow flower. You could also, the pinwheel jasmines are white and they grow year round. And bloom.
Like a bush. We're looking for short, blooming kind of things.
Okay, but do you want them to last all year? Or are you just putting them in for the season?
For the season.
Okay, just for the season. Then I would definitely, you could do a couple of things. You could do the poinsettias. You could also do, daylilies. Some of those are blooming right now. But then also, too, you could do begonias. You could do New Guinean patience, which can take sun. And so that would be colorful year-round. Then also, too, you could do bromeliads, too, as well. So 60 feet, I would probably do the begonias or the New Guinean patience for color.
Okay.
You could also do chrysanthemums, too.
How about petunias? Are they good?
Petunias would be great. Super petunias. Petunias would be lovely. And they will last you all the way through springtime. So they will do good. They can take the cold weather. They will do fine. That's a good color. I mean, that's a good choice for flower.
Okay. Thank you for your advice.
You're welcome. Thank you. Send me a picture of it. I'd love to see it. Thank you, Les. We appreciate it. So let's go to our text messages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you better not skip Tony's because I literally almost peed myself in here laughing at it.
So my husband texts us in, "Do I not know her clout, Lizzie? I once went into Appenberry's to buy Teresa a surprise for Mother's Day, and I found this unique, amazing plant. And the staff recognized me from my visits there with Teresa, and they asked me if it was for Teresa. I said it was, and then they asked me if Tony sent me to pick it up, and I replied it was a present. The staff member hesitated and said, well, we should call her to make sure it's what she wants. Tony, you don't know what you're doing, but are you sure Teresa wants this? That's too funny.
That is hysterical.
Poor Tony.
He is so awesome. He's such a trooper.
He is. He's very good. He's very, very good. All right, so great question from Buffalo in Melbourne Beach. He said, I wondered when I should trim my 7-year-old avocado that's grown from seed and is over 25 feet tall. Hurricane Nicole about killed it back, but it bounced back. Also, an avocado baby tree has sprouted from the root only 10 inches from the trunk and is growing stronger, okay? And he says, growing strong in the middle of the branches and leaves. I did trim and clear to let the baby sprout grow without getting beat up last week. This tree hasn't flowered yet. I just fertilized the soil in the area that the branches spread out. Some dead tips are left on top, but you told me last year not to trim it, and so I suspect it will produce in the next couple of years. Okay, Buffalo, anything that's dead, you can always cut off, okay? So when we're talking about trimming, when you called me last year, it probably was, should I trim it the top back to make it, you know, grow taller. But anything that's dead, any dead branches, you can always cut off. So that's important. Cut this branch that's coming out from the root off. It's a sucker. So your avocado tree is grafted, and the sucker is taking away nutrients and energy from the main tree. So go ahead and cut it off and do it now. And then fertilizing on a regular basis. Fruit trees need to be fertilized every 3 to 6 months with a good phosphorus blooming fertilizer, so that a fruit tree fertilizer, citrus and avocado, would be great. That will help it produce. It should have had fruit before now. So I'm just kind of wondering why you haven't had it. It's 25 feet tall. It should be producing. If not, you should get a really good crop next year. Okay, great question, Buffalo. Thank you for listening to me and doing what I told you. And so I'm kind of changing my answer now. But you can always prune dead branches off. You don't want to cut the tip, the top of the avocado off. That's going to make it kind of grow a little wonky. So it's not necessarily recommended. All right. So Brenda in Ocoee says, why are squirrels nibbling off my elm branches and dropping tons of 6-inch pieces, making a mess? They're bored. Okay, Brenda, they're bored. No, not really. They are doing a couple of things. They could be making nests for winter. And so they're just cutting off the branches, and they're just going to take them and put them into their nest area. That's what squirrels do. And they're getting ready for the winter time. So, but they can break branches and nibble on them. They kind of like vegetation.
Yeah, our property is circled in our driveway too with fir trees. And I know what time of year it is for them, because whenever I come in, there's little fir tree bits all over the, you won't even see the driveway because they'll strip the stuff down. But
yep.
I love it, because that means that we got squirrels and good things going on.
Okay, real quick, Saturday morning, she loves to listen to the show. She's having a real problem with asparagus ferns, and they're growing around plants. The only way to get rid of them, if they're growing around plants, is to dig them out. Get rid of the tubers. You need to get rid of the tubers. It might mean that you have to dig up your plants in that area and pull the tubers out of the roots, and then replant your shrubs. So this is a good time of the year to do that as well. Jerry in Davenport, how often should I lime my St. Augustine lawn? Only when necessary. Get a soil test kit, Jerry, from the University of Florida Extension Office. Soil test kit from Agritech online. And it will tell you if you even need to do it. The state of Florida is lime, so there's don't do anything to your lawn unless you get a soil test kit. We've got so many other text messages. I'm going to respond to them after the show's over. Big thank you to Eric Appen from Appenberry's Garden Center. Just wonderful. It is a destination nursery. Go, and you will see so many beautiful plants. They have wonderful stock, good quality from proven winners. They are excellent. The colors are beautiful in their garden. Lizzie, thank you so much for being here. I love teaming up, and we can do a great job. So I appreciate you.
Well, thank you. Thank you to our listeners. You guys rock and are the best.
I will post all the links to to everything that I discussed today, and I'll be posting more pictures of the flowers that you can find at Appenberry's. I just went yesterday and had a great time. Big thank you to Dana Venrick and Quality Green Specialist Nursery for sponsoring the show. He has wonderful native trees, nut trees, tropical trees, fruit trees, and a whole assortment of vegetables and all sorts of good soil amendments for your lawn and your soil. So we really do appreciate them. From the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios, maker of organic mosquito bits and dunks and organic year-round oil spray, I'm Teresa Watkins. It's Saturday morning. You're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network.
Make sure you use our iHeartRadio app to catch up and play past shows. Just search Better Lawns and Gardens and you'll be able to find us. Also, stay tuned Monday through Friday. We're giving away $1,000 weekdays starting at 9 a.m. here on WFLA Orlando.